This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the ifanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 217, brought to you by In Stock Trades, drawer boxes by CollectionDrawer.com, and ifanboy listeners exactly like you. Guy Fanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 217. The pause there is key. If you pause just right, you can make Ron laugh. That's what I've learned. I am Josh Flanagan, and I'm here with, of course, Ron Richards.
Hello.
Hello, mate. No. And Connor Kilpatrick.
Are we doing voices now? Is that what's happening?
We're doing.
We've become voices. You do voices?
That's yeah. That, I've got a horn here.
I wasn't actually doing a British guy. I was trying to do Squiggy from Laverne and Shirley.
Oh.
Hello.
You're not a master of impression.
No. Hello. No. I like to impress sitcom stars from 30 years ago as well.
Elaine. Sorry. I can do single sentences of some sitcom characters.
God. All right, move on.
At ifanboy.com, we read comics when we like them too. And we read them because those things go together. And every week, we all read a bunch of comic books that come out that week on the Wednesday. And then one of us, usually alternating every third week, will have the task of picking the pick of the week, which is the book that they liked the best, the one that they thought was their favorite. And that's all there is to it. That's the sweet science. That's boxing. Then we come here. We talk about it on the podcast. We talk about the other books from the week. So even if the book that is our pick of the week is not your pick of the week, there's a good chance. I'm saying 35-40% that we'll get to your book too. Anyway, and talk about some other stuff. Before we get to the show, we're going to talk about what happened in those books. So if you haven't read them yet, you may consider that a spoiler, and then your book should be ruined. But so come back later after you've read them or just power through. It's cool with us, man. Whatever you want to do. Ron, you had the pick this week, and go.
Thank you. So my pick of the week this week was the comic book with the best cover in all the comic books released this week, as referenced in the best covers post on iFanboy.com. Good job, Connor.
You're welcome.
Sword number one from Marvel Comics, written by written by Kieran Gillen, drawn by Steve Sanders. Steven Sanders, who I wonder if Steven Sanders says it's Steven Sanders to avoid any 902.10 jokes.
I think he does.
Yeah, I think
Do you think
does
that's out of the cultural lexicon enough that he has to still worry about that?
I don't think it is, because obviously he's sung by Steven.
Can I point something else out?
Sure.
When you said written by, you said it exactly like Tom Gators.
Yeah, I did.
I thought you were going to say written by Irv Novik, pencil.
You can't talk about a book without and doing the credits without doing it.
I can't match that sort of enthusiasm.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Anyway, so Sword number three. I knew I was doing something. I didn't know what. Thank you for placing the voice. I appreciate it. So Sword number three, is, for those of you who don't know, this is a new series from Marvel, and it's picking up the characters that were introduced by Joss Whedon in the pages of Astonishing X-Men, specifically Abigail Brand and the organization called Sword, which Sword stands for the Sentient World Observation and Response Department. And essentially the idea is that, you know, we had S.H.I.E.L.D. here on Earth and Nick Fury, and, you know, they were the strategic hazard. What does S.H.I.E.L.D. stand
blah,
for?
Blah, 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 blah. Depends on who you ask. Depends if you're in the movies or the comics. They're all different.
Sure. Anyway, so the idea is that S.W.O.R.D. exists, and S.W.O.R.D. was S.H.I.E.L.D., but in space. They're on a satellite in space, and they protected Earth from aliens and stuff like that. Great concept. Joss Whedon, great idea bringing it in. It was a key aspect of the last story arc of Astonishing X-Men. And then and he got this great romance between Beast and Abigail Brand, introduced that, and then it just kind of laid there. And nobody did anything with it. And then Secret Invasion comes along, and basically we get a glimpse at Brand and S.W.O.R.D. because when the Skrull invasion happens, S.W.O.R.D. kind of failed. So we got a little.
Kinda.
Yeah, it did, big time. We got a little glimpse at that. And then we've also gotten a glimpse of Abigail Brand in the pages of Spider-Woman, as she, Jessica Drew, was hired by Abigail Brand to be an agent of S.W.O.R.D. So they're all over around the Marvel Universe. There's been, you know, different writers, different people doing stuff with this character in this organization. So they decided to give it a book, an ongoing, entitled S.W.O.R.D. It kind of is focusing on the satellite and Brand and this whole kind of world of, protecting Earth from aliens. When it was announced, I'll be honest, I was like, oh, that's going to get canceled. Like, that was my first reaction.
Well, it's not necessarily wrong, nor it still could happen.
Right, and I feel bad because and my other thought was that I wasn't sure whether Brand and the organization of S.W.O.R.D. actually deserved or warranted a full ongoing about it. So I was skeptical. And it's tough because Kieran Gillen, big fan, Phonogram, you know, big fan of his writing. So I bought it. I bought the first issue, and I had a general violent reaction because the way Steven Sanders draws Beast was
horse-faced Beast.
Yeah, even more of a departure from the cat-like Beast that Frank Quitely defined with Grant Morrison's run. And it just looked wrong to me, and I had one of those irrational kind of feelings, and it permeated throughout the rest of the book. The second issue I thought was scattered and just kind of all over the place, and it was very chaotic. But for whatever reason, I wrote this in my review on iFanboy.com, reading this third issue, everything just kind of clicked for some reason. The story, basically as it presents it, is that Brand's leadership has come under challenge by our favorite government bureaucrat, Henry Peter Gyrich, who, by the way—
When you say our, you mean yours.
No, everyone's. He's the Marvel bureaucrat.
Do you know any other bureaucrats? I don't know.
Name me one more paper pusher in the Marvel Universe that you like better than Gyrich.
All right.
So Henry Peter Gyrich has been assigned to co-lead S.W.O.R.D. with Brand. And when this issue picks up, it's right after he's made the decision that, you know, really the only way to protect Earth is to get all the aliens off of Earth and send them back to their homes, which includes Agent Brand because she's half alien. So it starts off with Brand imprisoned. And
Norman's assistant from the Dark Avengers.
Oh, Victoria Hand?
Yeah.
Okay. She's a good bureaucrat.
There.
Yeah, there you go.
Fair enough.
Okay, so
you couldn't name her, but all right.
Yeah, exactly.
That was very unsatisfying.
And she's kind of new, so I don't really think she's, you know, Guy Rich has been around since the 80s, 70s, but whatever, you know.
Listen, I've derailed the show. I know. I can feel your disappointment.
So anyway, so they're
sending the Kryptonians back to Krypton.
So Brand is imprisoned, and basically a lot of this issue is basically just Beast kind of trying to manipulate everyone and orchestrate breaking Brand out so that they can, you know, kind of set things right. And it becomes a breakout story almost, you know, like one of those that, not a, I want to say a heist, but it's not a heist because it's a breakout.
It's a prison break story.
Lockheed, as seen on the cover, Kitty Pryde's dragon, who is depressed at the loss of Kitty Pryde. Although that happened like 2 years ago, so you think he'd get over it by now?
Get over it.
Yeah.
Stupid dragon.
Dragons have a much longer grieving period.
Yeah. But
dragons are like trees. They see time differently than we do.
Anyway.
Whoa. You got all Tolkien.
So Lockheed gets involved in the action, and Lockheed is badass, which is great. And the other cool thing about this is that there's this character who I believe was introduced in this book. I'm not sure if he was introduced anywhere else, but there's this robot that is imprisoned in the maximum security prison area called called Unit. Yeah, it's not IG-88.
Scary, scary robot, dude.
But so we find out more about who this unit robot is as he talks to Beast, and just the way Gillen writes this character and his like demeanor and the way he's kind of like playing both sides from the middle, and you get the idea that he's smarter than everyone, and you know, it really just everything about this issue kind of grabbed me and held me in, and I even found myself enjoying Steven Sanders' art a lot. And not even hating the way he draws Beast. I actually kind of got used to it.
You didn't hate that? You liked Horseface Beast?
I'm warming up to it. I'm warming
so
up.
So you are pro Horseface Beast. We could put you on a poster saying I approve.
I approve of this Beast. I'd say more.
Is that what you're saying? Are you saying that?
Is that what I'm understanding? It's more and just like I should calm down a little, and it's an interpretation, and you know.
Jesus, I can't believe we just got that recorded. Put that on a ringtone or something.
But anyway,
every time you go to iPhone.com, it's going to play.
I like Horseface Beast. I should calm down.
What happened to Jimmy McKelvey? Is he not doing backup in this anymore?
He did a backup in the first issue, and that was it. It's too bad. And I think that's part of also in the first issue. He made that unit character look really good. And so, and I didn't mean that in a weird way.
Every time you say unit, I've choked back a laugh. That was like the sixth time, and I'm only human.
Yeah. But so Steven Sanders is on the full book, and his, you know, I enjoyed his layouts. His storytelling was great. The pacing of some of the segments of the story were, you know, because it's you know, there was tension, but there was suspense. You don't have all the information. You're seeing stuff happen, and he really controlled that pace really well in the layouts. I don't know. It was just a fun book, and at the end of the day, at the end of the week, I was just like at the end of my stack, I was just like, you know, that was the one I had the most fun reading. I really enjoyed it. I kind of hope this series sticks around.
You know what's really underrated about Steven Sanders is he's got a bitchin' car.
That Corvette, man.
You don't understand how hard it is to get a hair like that to sort of stay under control.
You realize, poor this guy, Steven Sanders, is probably going to listen to this, and he's like, God, 90210 again!
You know what? The thing is, this isn't his fault. This is your fault.
It's my fault.
If you weren't the 90210. Yeah. Steven, if you're listening, I want you to understand that Ron is, I'm going to say, as big a 90210 fan as a man in his 30s can be.
I would put my 90210 fandom on the same level as my X-Men fandom.
Yes, I would.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that on a scale of 1 to 10? Is that 10 or is that 9?
Well, what does the numbers mean?
8, 5. Well, 10 being like I'm outside of Jenny Garth's house every night.
No. Look, I'm not crazy.
Right, because the crazy people always think they are.
I will admit that I did drive by Jason Priestley's house.
9.5.
9.5. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
So
would you? Okay. If you were in a deli and you saw Chris Claremont, like, and he was sitting at a place, he's sitting by himself and he was eating a sandwich and he clearly looked like he didn't want to be disturbed, would you still go talk to him?
No, I would not.
Wow.
Would you bang the counter and say, Claremont?
his focus is just amazing. I've come around in that I don't want to bother people. I've had opportunity to talk to Claremont at cons. I've been like 6 feet away from him. I leave him alone.
It was a joke about how crazy you were.
Right.
I got it.
But now if I was in a deli and I was standing next to Jenny Garth, it would be, yeah, forget it. So.
All right, but what about like a lesser star?
Like
what about like Emily Valentine?
Well, I think we know this has already happened, Josh.
That's true.
When I went up to the girl who was in like three episodes and gushed that she was on 90210 and then said, oh, so what are you doing now? And I looked down at all the Playboy's friends at her table. That was embarrassing.
All right. Amazing.
Didn't buy anything.
Wow, we're off the rails in less than 10 minutes. So I enjoyed Sword Number 3. It was really good. It's, you know, the first two issues are probably still in your store if you want to catch up. If you like kind of, you know, spacey stories, if you like.
How tied into it is into the X-Men?
Not at all. Not.
Other question for you. Somebody on the message board posted this, and I was curious. If they don't buy the first two issues, they just buy the third issue, will they be okay?
Yeah, there's a recap page.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So pick it. Give it a shot. So,
get away.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. So, good times. Sword Number 3. You know, and it's just it's like these fun. It reminds me of these like on the outskirts books. You know, like why we like Nova and Guardians of the Galaxy and stuff like that. They're not. This isn't, you know, Siege. This isn't the big event or whatever. But it just it's
on its own.
Yeah, it's on its own. It's a good comic book. So
I won't read books like that. Books that are on their own, I don't care about.
He needs a banner on top.
Yeah.
Unless it's tied in. No banner. Josh ain't reading it.
Unless it's tied into something that's got a big name attached. It has to be at least one step away from Mark Miller.
Jeez.
If not, then I won't read it.
So hey, runner-up to Pick of the Week, though, was Amazing Spider-Man 617.
Oh.
You know what Joe Kelly and Max Fury and Amora do when they're not doing indie books? They're doing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
They're not finishing their indie books.
What was great about this was, first, as Connor, you also highlighted this cover on the covers post, which was good call. And I actually got the variant one too, which is just it's the white and it's a little cracks. It's like before he broke through it.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But anyway, what's great about this issue? So we're in the middle of the gauntlet thing with Spider-Man, where they're focusing on basically they're reinventing all of his rogues gallery.
It's classic rogues gallery, yeah. Sandman and Rhino and Electro was the first one, I think.
Yeah, and like a really good and we've already got Lady Kraven and you know, like in a really good way. Like this is the kind of stunt that I should be like, oh, this sucks, but like they're doing it really well.
Yeah, they did this in another book. I can't remember. Oh, Ultimate Spider-Man. It's like I can't imagine where they got the idea,
but
hey, you know what worked when we did this 10 years ago?
You know what was great about this book was the original Rhino.
Yes. No, this is a really great book. This is one of the better Spider-Man issues I think in a while.
Yeah,
and they've been pretty good. So
they've been really good. So this is one of the more standout ones. Like, you got to give Joe Kelly a lot of credit. He really nails this book every time he writes an issue or an arc. He's perfect for Spider-Man. He's got that balance of humor and drama and just nailed. And he really does a good job of portraying Peter Parker as the quintessential Peter Parker. He's a lovable loser here.
Yep. And it's fascinating because he did not write Spider-Man for most of his career. I mean, this is only a recent thing. This is the first time he's ever had any real time with the character. And the other part of that is him bringing along artists like Max Fiamura. And I mean, I want to see the next issue of Four Eyes as much as anybody, but this is a real good-looking book.
What I love about these Gauntlet stories is that these are pretty much one and done's too.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And like this one, not only do you get the great story but basically the storyline is that the old Rhino is gone straight. He's fallen in love. He's a security guard at a casino in Yonkers. And
25 minutes north of Midtown, my ass.
By the Metro North, it is. Yeah,
driving it is in the right traffic conditions.
Okay, yeah, so at 2 a.m.
So he's living a straight life, and now there's a new Rhino who feels the need to go and assert his new identity with the old Rhino. But
take down the old, bring in the new. He doesn't want any part of that. If we can get back to the art for a second, though, I thought there was at least one panel per page where I went, "Wow."
Yeah. Yep.
And it was just fantastic. They've really done a really good job, not just with the writers, but with pairing these artists on this book that have a really classic look to them. And the styles are not necessarily the same, but they all have that classic comics look.
Yep.
Between, no, Javier Bluto is the backup artist, and he couldn't be any more different than Fumora, but they both have a similar look in that, and it just seems like they're not overly busy pages. They're not. There's not a lot of cross hatching, and but they're all. They all seem very, very classic.
And I was going to say that in addition to the one and done story about the Rhino, there is a backup story which is great, written by Joe Kelly, Javier Paluto, like you said, which is basically bringing you up to speed on what's going on with the old Rhino, like how he got to this issue, which I thought was a great companion piece.
See.
Yeah, I think this was the highest pick of the week book from the community on the site, yeah. And. I was glad to see it because, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, Fumura is not a typical fan favorite kind of artist. You know what I mean? Like, I look at it and I think it's beautiful, but I found that is no barometer for how the public feels.
Yeah.
Right.
In, like, the last artist, Paul Azaceta, like, I thought that those were great and beautiful pages. And it's just really good to see people reacting like this. I like
his,
it a lot.
His Spider-Man looks kind of like Jay Lee.
Well, I was going to say it looks like Ditko.
Well, it's got a lot of different people in it, but yeah. I think the color... Next month is Marcos Martin, I believe. Oh, our next issue.
Man, it's an embarrassment of riches.
It really is. Spider-Man's just so good.
They've done a really good job of really keeping a high level of talent on this book consistently.
It's getting really more ridiculous for people to keep complaining about the Brand New Day stuff when it's like, uh-huh.
Yeah,
we'll talk about though. 2 years ago. I mean,
yeah. Well, no, Brand New Day. I'm done. I'm over with. They nailed it in that first year, and it's just mm-hmm. and aside from the Mark Guggenheim experience, which we want to forget, that one blemish on their perfect record, as far as I'm concerned. And this might be the best single issue of this in a while. Like Joe Kelly wrote the hell out of this Rhino story. I mean, just like I found myself, you know, like, you know, when they're getting into when Peter, like when Spider-Man confronts the old Rhino before he's about to put his old costume and go face the guy. Like, I was just like, oh, that's great. That's what Spider-Man is.
Yep.
You know, oh, it was so good. So good. So
really good. Yeah. In a little while, we're going to talk about the earlier part of this story. But right now I wanted to mention Unwritten number 9. This probably would have been my pick of the week. I know you're not, Ron, but Connor, are you still reading this in issues?
No, this is the first issue I dropped off of. Move the trade.
The thing about this was that much like – I forget what the other series – what was my pick last week? Sweet Tooth. much like that one, like for a couple of them, I was liking it, but I wasn't loving it. And the past couple of these, I thought they were fun and they were interesting. And it's funny because I was seeing everybody else really raving about Unwritten. And we get a lot of questions. We're like, well, how come you're not talking about this? And I was like, I don't know. Nothing really stood out for me to talk about. This issue, there's a lot of stuff that stood out for me to talk about. And it sort of ended this – I guess like the second arc where one of the characters goes to prison, basically. And I was being vague, but it was kind of stupid to be that vague. Anyway,
you gave a spoiler warning.
It's true. Well, Ron hasn't read it.
I'm okay. Because you gave a spoiler warning. It's my own fault.
All right. Anyway, the whole time, it was a man in the crying game.
She's a he. She's a he.
Don't look between the... Oh, no. Anyway, there was a choice at the end of this book to do something really horrible, and I was like, "Oh!" And I was very surprised, and it sort of ripped me right back into the story. I was like, "Oh, this is something they're going to have to deal with," and it set up a couple of different problems that the protagonists are going to have to deal with going forward. You know, the art's been as good as it's been all along. There's some stuff that goes on in this book that you don't really understand because it's sort of vague for stuff that you'll learn later, leaving that trail of breadcrumbs and things like that. Great, great issue. This has been the best one for me since the Rudyard Kipling issue, which I thought was fantastic.
So that's still the best issue.
We're going to talk about that in a little bit when we talk about the book of the month.
So are we?
We are. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, no. It's not in my script.
Hey, we talked about this.
Adventure Comics number 6, I think right now is my pick of the week, although it was jockeying for position with Amazing Spider-Man. But this was the final issue of Jeff Johns and Francis Manapal's 6-issue run on Adventure Comics, and they took the whole issue over in this one. They had the whole 32 pages or whatever it was. Really, it's funny because I never really was a big fan of Superboy. I like Superman. I didn't need Superboy. He had an earring and a leather jacket and a douchey haircut, so it wasn't really like
it was douchey.
I didn't really like him, but you know, over the years, Jeff Johns, and he's told us in person that he, I think, he's his second favorite character.
After Wally.
he's really, in my, for me, he's really rehabilitated him in not just here, but in Justice and in Teen Titans and the other books he's written with Connor in it. And he does a really, this sixth issue made me like him more than I've ever liked him. Yeah. He had a really good handle on him. And
well, it's interesting because throughout this whole story, he's been doing that whole kind of journal entries where he's, you know, Superboy because he's torn because he's part Superman, part Lex Luthor, and he's, you know, doing the what did Superman do, what did Lex do, and he didn't know which way he was going to go. He's had an evil turn before, and this, you know, brought it to a resolution and had him decide that, you know, of course he's going to be on the side of good more than evil. And I thought that process made him become more endearing. Yeah. And he really nailed that. And at the same time, I was like almost sick to my stomach by Lex in this issue. Like, literally,
Lex is an evil fucking bastard.
Like this was not a fun. This was an uncomfortable read. And it was just like, oh man, and like it dark. It's man.
But yeah. Beyond that, I like the construction of the issue in that basically, I mean, in my head, the entire six issue story has been told over the campfire to the rest of his friends.
Yeah.
The reveal is that Superboy is sitting around a campfire, literally Red Robin, Kid Flash, and Wonder Girl, and he's been telling them all about his time in Smallville with Lex Luthor. And it's kind of corny, but kind of not, which is what Geoff Johns is. That's the zone he lives in.
Yeah,
and
he treads that very fine line.
Yeah.
The thing that I really liked about this was the tease of the whole thing, because the whole time you were kind of wondering, well, is Lex going to do it? Is he not? And really, right up until the end, you didn't know.
Because I had no idea.
Because the one thing about the character is there's been so many interpretations of Lex Luthor that, in a way, they can kind of do anything with him. And there's not many readers who can be like, Lex wouldn't do that, because you don't know.
Yeah.
Because there's always whatever that ulterior motive is that he's always got.
And the thing that we're skirting around is the gist of the issue is that Lex is, you know, he's messing with Superboy, and he shows up and turns out his sister lives in Smallville. She's in a wheelchair and she's incurable. But then Luthor says, no, I can do it, and makes Superboy go all around getting all these gathering this stuff to make a cure. Cures his sister. She can get out of the wheelchair. She's fine. And then gives maybe like a minute? And then shoots her with another syringe and puts her right back in the state she was.
Well, just not just a wheelchair, but also she's a vegetable, so sort of a vegetable. And he cures her.
Yeah.
She gives her a minute with her daughter and him, and then he just shoots her right back and says, goodbye.
Yep.
Like, he's an evil fucking
man. He just wanted to prove that he could do it. And as he says, Lex giveth and Lex taketh away. And it was just like, oh, you're not a god, you bastard. So, anyway. It was good. It was a great issue. And oh, man, I can't wait for Flash. Manipal, oh, it's going to be glorious. It's going to be wonderful. So I just love
that. I know a lot of people were upset about them leaving, but I think it was a nice six-issue run. I don't know you had a nice conclusion. There was an arc here. I don't necessarily need any more than that.
Yeah. I gladly would give – I mean, this six issue is fine. I don't need more Superboy. I want Flash. So.
Yeah. Ron, are you still on Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Am I on Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Hey, yeah.
Another cover.
Hello.
The third best cover of the week on iFanboy.com. Yeah. The George Jonti's romance Lichtenstein nod.
Lichtenstein-esque cover. Yeah. I thought George Jonti drew the hell out of this issue, but for me, this was it for me. Like, I've been on the fence back and forth whether or not I was going to drop off, and I think I have no idea where this is going, nor do I care. I don't know what's happened. Like, ever since the Dracula arc, I don't think I've cared anything about what's happened in the story.
Things aren't so sunny in Sunnydale these days, or in Buffydale. It's been a rough go. And Whedon wrote this, didn't he?
That's why I was going to drop off with this issue, but then I saw this was a Whedon written one shot story, so I said, all right, I'll get that one. And it was fine. He really knows the characters and blah, blah, blah. But
see, now,
the overall story, I don't know it. I don't care about it. I forgot completely that there's a guy named Twilight in the background. That was the whole controversy this week about revealing
Buffy Gate. I love Buffy Gate. I
won't spoil it for people if you weren't online, but he showed up briefly in this issue. I went, oh, yeah. Like, I don't even remember he was there. I don't feel any connection to the story anymore.
And that's the thing. And if it goes back, if you remember when we were talking about this, this is season 8 and this is issue 31. And I think it's supposed to go like 40 or no. Like, it's going to end after the Meltzer arc, I think.
It's got a while to go.
I still think, and I said it a while ago, they should have ended this at issue 22, issue 23. like a TV season, and then started season 9 and get a lot of energy around it, because now it's just like, it feels like it's dragging on. Like, I feel as if Whedon didn't quite figure out how to tell a Buffy season in comic form over the long haul.
Yeah.
And that's the real problem. That's the
There was
real
a
challenge.
Lot of great stuff in this season. In this 31 issues, there's been a lot of great issues. This was, I think, 2 summers ago, one of my top 5 books. We talked about in the barbecue video show. And back then, it was great. 2 years ago, it was a fantastic comic. But now, between now and then, there's been too much just
it's
garbage.
Hard. Yeah. It's a hard read. But fans of Buffy, stay tuned to the end of the show, because we'll have a little announcement that you might want to hear about. But if you want to hear more about Buffy and this whole kind of world that we're talking about. But it's rough. And so after this issue, Meltzer comes on for a 4-issue arc, which is supposed to I believe it's after this issue. Which is gonna tackle the whole Twilight thing and all that sort of stuff. And I'm just hoping that they bring it in for a landing. You know?
I'm continuing to marvel, though, at George Gentry's ability to draw these characters that look enough like the actors without making them all DVD still frame shots.
Yep.
He's really incredibly good at that. It's pretty amazing.
Gentry's great. I mean, the art in this was, you're right, he drew the hell out of this. Yeah, next month Meltzer comes back with the story arc called Twilight, so...
You'll have to tell us all about it.
I will.
In the meantime, this episode of iFanboys Pick a Leaf podcast is brought to you in part by Drawer Boxes from CollectionDrawer.com. Drawer Boxes are the strongest storage container made for comics. They can be stacked up to 6 high to maximize the square footage. And because they work like a drawer, every comic in your collection remains accessible by simply pulling a drawer open. Long and short drawer boxes can be combined and linked together with box locks, box anchors, and any configuration to fit any space, and remain secure with absolutely no tipping or slippage. And now the contents can be organized and sorted to meet the needs of any collector. With each issue, immediately accessible drawer boxes, box sort, upright dividers, and box locks, box anchors are exclusive trademarks of CollectionDrawer.com and are available at CollectionDrawer.com. You can see me put one together and fill it with comics on our video show. You just look back on the feed for that.
And you didn't set up the system, though, because that's what they got is the system. Stack a bunch of them, connect
them
together.
No, I didn't
together.
Put them together. I just built one.
It's like Habit Trail, but Habit Trail, but for comics.
Yeah, I didn't know how I was going to put them together, so, you know. Right. Plus, I still haven't found all the ones I spilled everywhere.
Anyway, so drawer boxes are very cool.
Yeah, so make sure when you order them, mention iFanboy so they know you heard it here and the advertising works.
Yes, it does. And they're great use to I'm looking at my long boxes and thinking about it. I'm thinking about it.
But. Honestly, what did it for me and the reason why I'm switching over is, and I think people are going to be annoyed by this, but I don't care, is that I'd go to my storage unit to get comics for the shows, and the stuff on the bottom, I'd have to, you know, take everything off the top and lug everything around and try to find stuff I'm looking for, whereas now I can just open up, I can pull them open.
A couple years ago, I could write that off as like, oh, it's a good workout. Now it's just annoying. So.
Now it's just a sore day the next day.
Now it hurts for like 3 days after.
Yeah, exactly. We're old.
My back!
So the previous pick of the week a couple of weeks ago was Day Tripper by Fabio Moon and Gabriel Ba. Issue number 2 came out this week. And, you know, it's not even fair.
Sexy time!
Oh, yeah. This is a Brazilian sexy time.
Let's go to Brazil, guys.
It's great. I've been to Brazil. It's fantastic. Not like this, though. But another just amazing issue by them. It's great. It's just, I love this book.
I love that I don't know where this series is going or what it's about.
Yep.
No, but you're starting to get an idea about what it might be.
Right.
With this one. But, I mean, if it's like just a single sort of alternate story each issue, that could be really interesting.
Yeah.
If they can keep up the imagination and that stuff. And like, sexy time.
But I mean, it plays up to the same kind of trope that the first issue did, where it just shows a day in the life of a guy and it ends with him dying, and it's the end obituary at the end. It's just great.
They're really impressing with this series.
It's poetic, really. It's like this is a comics poetry.
Sure. That's the thing that was so great about the first issue. It was atmospheric, it was poetic, and it did a lot of things that made it unique. What you read normally during the week.
So it's issue 2. Go get issue 1. Get issue 2. It's great.
You could even just get issue 2.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're all self-contained.
Yeah.
I imagine the poetry transforms itself into Nation X 2 quite nicely.
Well, as you say, the segue of all segues, Nation X number 2 came out. This is the X-Men anthology book that's coming out around this whole Nation X kind of storyline. And I just want to say, like, I'm loving these little anthology books for an X-Men fan. And it's not everybody, and I'm not saying that you've got to stop what you're doing and go do it. But it's just a great way to highlight the different characters that are in the background of Uncanny and aren't getting that much screen time. But are still exist and you still might care about them. This had three stories in it, focusing on Jubilee, which was written by C.B. Cebulski and Jim McCann, friends of the show, and art by Mike Choi. And a great story about North Star trying to make it work with his boyfriend, with written and drawn by Tim Fish, which was a great kind of cartoony style. And then the last story was a Gambit story by Becky Cloonan, written and drawn by Becky Cloonan. So, like, they're getting cool people to do it, and it's a different take on these characters. And for an X-Men fan, it's fun. So, I liked it.
Josh, Die Hard.
I looked away for a half a second. Connor, you've read this all the way through, right?
Yes, yes.
All right, you may remember we talked about the first issue of Die Hard Year One, which is John McClane in the, I guess, early 80s, late 70s, something like that.
No, it's 76. It's the bicentennial
year. That's right. Okay. And this, I'm going to nitpick now more than I ever have, at least in a while. It was fine. Like, he did that kind of thing that you were talking about that Genty did. Like, he made it look kind of like Bruce Willis, but not really. It was kind of interesting.
I didn't think it was as successful.
No.
Well, except for the last panel.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a thing that bugged the hell out of me in this. Is the whole issue is time stamped. Did you notice that? Like, at the beginning, it was like at 10:43 this happens, and then this.
I did, but
like 24?
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah. But what happened is that they would put them randomly in the panels, and so there's one point where, like, one of the bad guys goes downstairs, and McClane is sneaking behind him. So he crosses past him, and it timestamps it as, like, at 10:51. And then, like, they turn around and punch at each other, and it's like 10:58. I was like, so that took 7 minutes? And like, it kept happening the whole way through. And it was really badly done. And once I saw that, wrecked the whole rest of the issue for me. If you didn't read those, it was fine and it was fun and whatever.
I didn't even register those, to be honest with you.
You were better off because they did not make sense.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I see. 11:31, he shoots at John McClane. They fight to 11:37. That's a long fist fight. Like, if you're 6 minutes, doesn't seem long, but if you're in a fist fight, that is a long fist fight.
Yeah, on a hijacked boat, it's very, very intense.
Yeah. I thought, other than the timestamp problem, which I didn't even notice till now, thanks Josh for ruining it. I thought what Howard Chaykin did really well in this issue, almost better than anything, was really capturing the feeling of 70s New York. Which, granted, I was very, very little, but even into the 80s, you had the same feeling of this sort of rough, dirty, dank city that, you know.
Yeah, that. And years later, the most part,
was really strong.
That was really strong. That was the strongest part of it. But I thought he also did a pretty good job of sort of imagining a John McClane at that time. It was pretty good.
Yeah, a young rookie cop, John McClane, just out of Vietnam.
Kind of smug.
On a police force that everyone hated at the time. It was. I thought it was really strong. This was a nice surprise. And it's not a miniseries. It's still going. So.
Oh, cool.
I'll be picking up the next one.
All right.
And Batgirl number 6. I talk a lot about Power Girl. And I think Batgirl deserves to be talked about just as much as Power Girl does. It is a really strong, in the same sense that Ron talked about S.W.O.R.D. being a sort of out of the whole event world and on its own. And Batgirl is a Bat book, obviously, and there's that whole sort of mini non-event Batman thing going on where they're all sort of tied together, but not. This is in that world, obviously, but it's not something you need to read anything else to enjoy. And it's really a really fun book, and they've turned Stephanie into a really fun character. This is written by Brian Q. Miller, who I've never read anything.
That sounds like a fake name.
Brian, anyone with Q in the middle.
Yeah, exactly. Didn't you just talk about something by a guy named Fish?
Yeah.
Well, Fish. There you go.
Tim Fish.
Tim Fish. That's a fake name, too.
I think you can totally pick this up, even though it's part two of the story. It's written where you can pick up what's happening, and it's a kidnapping investigation, and because the kidnapped victim is a son of a wealthy developer, Batman and Robin horn in on the case. Batgirl's involved because she goes to school with the guy. She's in college. And basically, she and Robin bicker like siblings. So Batman says, you're both off the case. And they both decide they're not going to listen to Batman. So they go off. And so she and Damian trying to work together.
And he wants to stab her all the time because she's stupid.
If I was going to be all petulant with Batman, I would say, whatever, dick. I would say that all the time.
It's really strong. Oracle's a supporting. She basically runs Batgirl. She's the supporting cast. And so there's a lot of tension between Dick and her. And the only thing that I have to say negatively towards the book is, and it's not really towards the book's problem, it's the general philosophy. I still don't understand all the animosity that they have, the characters, for sure, towards Stephanie, especially Tim, who I think Josh is still reading at the time when she came back, and he was like unnaturally angry at her for some reason.
Yeah.
And that's carried on through this issue.
I would say that I think the catalyst for that was all that, A, that he lied to her, or she lied to him, along with Bruce. But
she was
then,
supposed to be dead. She lies by not telling you you're alive, but I think he'd get over it at this point.
Well,
anyway,
it's kind of a big, but I mean, I can understand that lasting a little while. And also that she was in on something with Bruce that he didn't know about, and that will
cause
resentment.
Jealousy can be that, but you'd think you'd get over seeing your long lost girlfriend alive.
Yeah.
But
that's just you. You'd be like, let's go to bed, baby.
Let's do it. We'd already be in bed before this even got to the
story. So, anyway.
But if you're reading Power Girl, you like even the Batman books, you need to be reading Batgirl number one. It's quickly becoming one of the better Bat books.
Cool. So, meanwhile, back in the Marvel universe, Steve Rogers is back.
It's about time.
In the Marvels project. I forgot the Marvels project is being published. Issue 5 came out. And
you're not reading?
I'm reading it.
Well, that's one of why I wanted to talk about this book, because I think this is one of, if not the best book that's coming out that no one talks about.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It is really good.
Yep.
And I think a lot of us do with Steve Epting's art, which is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
Well, the whole team, isn't Dave Stewart the colorist on it?
Yes, Dave Stewart's the color. The book is beautiful, and this whole issue is about Steve Rogers becoming Captain America. He goes on his first mission. We see the Red Skull do some horrific things, and I was just reading this, marveling at the fact that no one talks about this book, and it's not like the biggest thing out in comics right now, because it is a book out of, you know, air quotes, you can't see I'm doing, out of continuity.
In an earlier time.
It's continuity, but it's not affecting anything else that's happening. So it's
how many issues is this supposed to go?
Eight.
This is going to make really one hell of a collection.
I was going to say the exact same thing. Yep.
Yeah. We're going to recommend this one a lot.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
I can tell you that
already. It's fantastic.
Yep.
All right, cool. So on to the user reviews. If you go to ifanboy.com/comics, you can see all the books that came out this week, and you can write your own reviews of them after you read them. And the first one comes from O'Caroline, which is she reviewed X-Men Origins Cyclops and gave the story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 3 out of 5, and nobody made it their pick of the week. And O'Caroline says, overall, this is pretty skippable unless you're a big fan of the Summers Brothers relationship, which to me is one of the most interesting family relationships in comics and always needs more attention than it gets. That was enough for me to enjoy this book, but if you don't care about that, I wouldn't bother with this issue. It won't give you any new insight into Cyclops, although it's comforting to know that whatever they recon, Professor X will always be a jerk. So, and I have to agree with O'Caroline on this. I bought this after reading the X-Men Origins Iceman one, remember that I loved? Hoping that this would be great. But this was not very good.
So. I don't see how she enjoyed a book. She gave a 2 out of 5 and a 3 out of 5.
Well,
that's just me.
Yeah. Well,
people do different things with their numbers, man.
You mean everybody doesn't have the same definition of those numbers? You're kidding me.
Turns out.
I'm going to bring down an iron fist in these numbers.
Some dudes never give a 5, ever. Jimsky's never given a 5 in his life.
Wow.
Me, whatever's best that week, that gets a 5. Huh. I grade on a curve. Next up, comic book Chris. We don't know how he grades. He talked about Catwoman Blackest Night, number 83. Gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. So apparently he liked it. The pick of the week percentage is a 0.6%, less than 1%. Even for those who didn't read this arc, read the arc that this one references, the story is 100% penetrable. As Bedard uses the first page to set the stage and mood for the entire issue with a recap and pictures of the events leading up to here, it's not complicated at all, as it's a pretty simple story going in. There were also about 4 artists credited for this issue, but everything looks pretty seamless and almost imitates David Lopez's style for the latter Catwoman issues. So everything about Catwoman 83 was great, as I had quite a bit of fun reading this. Not only does this have more heart and emotion than a big chunk of the Blackest Night tie-ins, but it also continues the story from what I think is one of the best comic runs ever. If you enjoyed this issue, I urge you to pick up the rest of this Catwoman series. It is absolutely stellar. That was a long.
This was the first week that I didn't buy any Blackest Night titles. I didn't buy any of the next issues or any. You know, I was just like, you know, none of them. They're not for me. So, but
this was okay. It was. I didn't. I read Catwoman up until Brubaker left it, and I dropped off of that. So I never read towards the end. I didn't read the stories, this references, but this was okay. This was fun. I would disagree with him that the different artists were seamless. You could really tell when they were, and they were all fine, so it wasn't a problem, but it was really apparent when they switched artists. Yeah. But it was fine. They were all good artists, so it didn't make a difference.
Oh, the rushed books of Blackest Night.
Yeah. So. The other one that came out was pretty good. The Power Shazam one that had Don Kramer, who was becoming really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, really good. I was pretty impressed by his art in that book.
Cool. Yeah, he's been good on everything he's done for a while now.
They need to put him on something and let him go. You know, let him run with it. Yeah,
he's turned into
he did Nightwing for, you know, like a year.
Yeah.
He was on Detective with Dini for a good long while. He just did that JSA versus Cobra with Eric Troutman.
Yeah.
You know, and that turned out really
good.
Well.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to see him get on a book and stay there for a while. It seems like they're shuffling him around a lot for whatever reason.
This Catwoman is good. If you read Catwoman, you would like it. It was a nice little tale.
Cool. All right. So go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can see all the books that came out, rate and review them, and do your pull list and all the fun stuff. So book of the month time. So to start off the new year, I had the wonderful task of doing the book of the month for January. And I think I threw you guys a curveball with this
one. Admit it. You're fucking with us.
I'm not.
Yeah. you didn't read that.
I have no idea.
You're fucking with us. You're fucking with me. Yeah. You're fucking with Josh.
If I could just bring you back to when I refreshed the page and saw what the book of the month was, I said,
I did the same thing. I don't remember what had happened. What? I think it was when I was editing the piece. I went, wait a minute.
So the book of the month was The Unwritten, Volume 1, Tommy Taylor and the Bogus Identity. And it was written by Mike Carey with art by Peter Gross, published by Vertigo/DC Comics. And we talked about this earlier in the show with Unwritten number 9 came out this week. So it's good timing that we're talking about this book. So, you know, those of you longtime listeners of the show, you know, I've got a little bit of a bias towards Vertigo, a irrational bias that was presented about, 10, 15 years ago in a reaction to Goths and Sandman, which has been proven wrong again and again. I know. and in fact, I find myself reading more Vertigo now than I really have ever at any point in time. And Vertigo does some great stuff. I admittedly, and no offense, Josh, I didn't love Fables. I think I understand it's well written and that's good, but I always kind of tease and joke that it's, you know, if you're an English major, you'll love it. And when I heard the premise for The Unwritten, I thought it was like, it's another Fables-like book. Because basically what the idea was, and it's a great premise, it's a clever, clever premise. There's an author who wrote a series of books that are very similar to like the Harry Potter series of books about a character named Tommy Taylor. And that author went missing. He never finished the series. And now his son, who is named Tommy Taylor, who the character was supposedly based on,
Tom
Taylor, is making a career of just appearing at conventions about the books and doing signings and making appearances and kind of living off his father's legacy. Great premise. Great premise. A lot of little jabs in at pop culture and also the comics world. Like in the first issue, there's a picture. He's at Tommy-Con, and it's a ripoff of the San Diego Comic-Con logo, which I thought was funny. But Mike Carey did a really interesting thing with this, and then he came up with a clever premise, and then he executed it really well and made it not only more clever but really grabbing by introducing a whole bunch of different ideas in this first volume that totally got me. The idea that maybe Tommy Taylor really is the kid from the book, and maybe there's a whole nother dimension of fictional worlds that there are portals on our earth that access to, and maybe his father had access to that. Maybe there's a whole organization that kind of controls fiction writers. And this all got laid out in these first five issues that are collecting this trade paperback, and it was just so compelling and totally grabbed me. I sat down and read it, and I didn't put it down. I finished it, and I finished it in one sitting. I really like Peter Gross's art. Very, very clean, almost easily dismissed as the Vertigo style kind of art. But he
do you know that he? I mean, the big thing he did before was Lucifer.
Yep.
But he didn't do that by himself. He did every issue of Lucifer with Ryan Kelly.
Interesting.
I couldn't even tell you how they broke it up.
Right.
But it was like a combination of their styles.
Yeah. So. So it really, really, really impressed me, and I thought it was It was a clever idea. If you're an English major, you'll love it. But at the same time, like I'm gonna read these in trade. Like I'm totally hooked. I'm on board.
Even a dumb guy like you can like it.
Yeah, even a a short-sighted, you know, X-Men fan can read it.
I like this. I despite dropping it this week for a trade, it wasn't any reflection on the story. I like this book a lot. And the issue that gets mentioned most often, which it deserves to, is the Rudyard Kipling issue in this, which I think is issue 5.
It's the last. It's the last story in this trade paperback.
It's 5.
And that's the one that really got me because it was a one and done story about Rudyard Kipling giving it basically expanded the universe, and it was like, oh, what he's building up here is bigger than just this one story, which I love. I love a conspiracy theory. I love that sort of thing. So. That was
just an amazing single issue. But the whole thing, the whole idea, I like to play on Harry Potter, but it's not cutesy.
Yeah.
It's enough, it's winking enough where if you like that, you know, it's amusing, but it doesn't really affect the story other than gives you context immediately for the characters and for the world. And you understand the Harry Potter hysteria, so you understand the Tommy Taylor hysteria. Yeah. You don't need to, you know, build too much on that. You can just go with it. It's nice. It's a really strong story.
Yeah, it was just really, really smart and well done. And Peter Gross and Mike Carey worked really well together, I think, in terms of, you know, getting across the mood.
The art's great. The art doesn't get talked about enough.
That's one of the things that I was really, really impressed by the art. So, and Mike Carey's a great writer, and I know that. I'm not, you know, I've never, you know, he's doing great stuff on the X-Men stuff, so with X-Men Legacy, but which is kind of funny when you think about that. But so check it out. If you want to pick up the Unwritten Volume 1, you can go to instocktrades.com and you can get it for, you ready? You know how much they're selling it for? $6.29.
Yeah.
37% off cover price for $6.
There's no excuse not to get that.
Exactly.
I mean, it's $10 cover, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So even at $10 cover,
there's no excuse, right? Yeah. So head over to InStock Trades, and we want to thank them for sponsoring this episode. Over at InStock Trades, you can save up to 37% off most titles. They've got free shipping on orders over $50. They've got like over 9,000 trades and collected editions in stock. They've got all the new releases that come out every Wednesday, and orders usually ship within 48 hours. So go to instocktrades.com. You can get this month's book of the month, The Unwritten Volume 1, for $6.29. So can't beat that. So thank you.
Ooh, yeah.
Emails.
All right. Vin writes. Is it Vin?
Yes, Vin.
All right. Vin says, "Hi, guys. I have a growing interest in Mike Allred's art and storytelling. I'm familiar with his guest appearances in Fables and his run on Wednesday Comics, and now I want to dive into his Mad Men series." Mad Men. "At my local comic book store, I see Mad Men, Atomic Comics, Mad Men Comics, Mad Men the Atomics, etc. I'm unsure where to start. Which trades do you recommend I read first?"
Yeah.
Good question.
Ron.
It's a good question indeed. Here's the thing. Mad Men is one of those, which, by the way, before Mad Men was on AMC, like it's saying Mad Men is impossible now. I can't say it. Mad Men.
Really, season one is where you should start, so you should get that Don Draper Kodak speech.
Mad Men.
Really, that's the whole show.
The carousel.
Mad Men by Mike Allred is unique in that he has been published by Dark Horse, Oni, and Image in that title. Like, he's a true creator-owned. He's moved from publisher to publisher. Depends on how involved you want to get. If you're really committed, then there's a Mad Men Gargantua hardcover, like an omnibus that Image put out that you can still probably find online some places. And it's got all the old, really old stuff. It's a big, thick book, big, thick omnibus. If you're kind of casual, you're not quite sure, then pick up Mad Men Volume 2 from Image Comics, which collects the run that just finished that they've been publishing. But really, pick up anything, because there's Mad Men is kind of so out there. If you like his art, you'll love the art in it. The story might be a little challenging because it's so existential and so kind of weird. But Image has put out a bunch of trade paperbacks. Pick up Volume 1. Pick up Mad Men and the Atomics Volume 1. It really doesn't matter. You're going to enjoy it. There's no like continuity that you need to really follow. So
this is Ron saying that, so it must be.
Yeah, totally. Just grab one and read it. Give it a shot.
If you have any other email questions you want to ask us, you can write in at contact@ifanboy.com. And now we're going to do a couple of voicemails. I think it's been a little while.
It has been.
It's not because of you guys. I'm talking to the audience, not you two.
It's us.
Running.
It's not you.
it's us. It's not you. I invented that. The first one is from someone. You should leave your name, people.
Hello, iFanboy. I was looking ahead at 2010 at the movies and noticing that there's going to be another great year for comic book movies. Got Kick-Ass, got Pilgrim, Okay, those are the only two that come to mind immediately, but they're going to be awesome. And I was just kind of wondering, which medium do you think does superheroes better, movies or comics?
Luckily, we had Ron do a little bit of research.
I actually did some journalism here by looking at another journalist.
You did some blogging.
It looks like we're averaging like a good like 5 or 6 movies every year recently.
So he missed a couple.
So this is your order of comic book movies in 2010. Kick-Ass is opening in April. The Mark Miller, John Romita, we've seen the trailer. It's been on iFanboy.com. You forgot a big one there, buddy. Iron Man 2 comes out in May, on May 7th. Ooh, my birthday weekend. Jonah Hex on June 18th, opening the same weekend as Toy Story. Scott Pilgrim vs. the World on August 13th. Red on November 19th, which is a Warren Ellis spy comic that was adapted.
Is that even in production?
I don't know. It's listed November 19th here. So,
well, if it's Warren Ellis, there's a good chance that they announced it and it never came out.
And then finally, Green Hornet on December 22nd with Seth Rogen.
So, is that in production?
Really?
I see a picture here. Yeah. So. And this guy who wrote this article I found said, Hornet might just capture the pulp spirit that the Spirit lacked.
No, it won't.
That's anyway, what you want to do is compare it to the Spirit, the movie no one's thought of.
So what I find really interesting, though, is that those are all comic book movies, and of those, only one of them is a superhero movie. Iron Man. Oh, I guess Kick-Ass.
Kick-Ass is.
So two. Yeah, so there are two of them. So his second question is, what does superhero stories better, comics or movies?
Animation.
I have to go with comics.
I mean, I have to too.
It's the form. I mean, you know, the long term sort of
the serialized story. No budget.
And it's just based on imagination.
Yeah,
I think they both do better. They do things that are different and better.
Yeah. All right, but if I had to pick one, I'd rather have the comics.
I don't know. But sitting in the movie theater watching a superhero movie is a lot of fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
It brings life a way a comic could never do.
Listen, I am not indicative of the general populace. We know this.
Yeah. That's for sure. All right. Our next voicemail's got a question. It's got a question that I ask myself every Wednesday.
Hello. This is Anthony from New York. And I read Project Superpowers. And I completely recognize its mediocrity, but I can't stop reading it. So my question for you is there a book that you read that you recognize is not great, great comics, but you love it anyway? Thanks a lot, guys. Love the show. Take care.
You know, we almost asked two questions because it was, are there any books that aren't good that you're still reading, or are you okay with mediocrity?
Interesting. You know,
it's like that.
Two different things.
It is kind of two different things. And I think that I bet we all have very different answers for this. I know that, like, I have very little tolerance for if a book starts to bore me, I drop it immediately.
Yeah.
And so I tend to not do that. It's not a lot that I keep going that I get bored with. Ron, you probably have a different call.
Well, Ron and I think similar in that we have a lot of loyalty to characters. So yep. Ron reads the X-Men through thick and thin. He reads the Flash through thick and thin. I read the Batman books through thick and thin. Right now, I don't think they're mediocre, so I'm fine. But if they were mediocre, I'd still be reading them. So it's a theoretical answer.
Two words for you. Flash kids.
Right. I dropped that one.
I did not. I stuck with it.
No, but Connor, you only do that with like a Batman book.
Right.
Because you did drop Flash. So,
I did, yeah.
You know, well, we all have
everything
our
lines. Else is fair game.
Yeah.
Everything else is fair game.
Supposedly, we all have our lines that we draw. I have yet to find that line.
About comics, Ron.
I know. But it's like, you know, and honestly, like, I'll be honest with you, like, actually this week I bought Uncanny X-Men First Class number 7 and I made it about 4 pages in. I'm like, why am I reading this?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's
showing growth.
It's not anything, like, not that it's bad, but it's like Scott Gray writing it with pencils by Nelson DeCastro. Like there's nothing special about this book anymore. It's not what Jeff Parker did a couple of years ago at all. You know, and so I was like, but the thing is, my thought process is, it's issue 7. It's 7 of 8. I just got one more to go.
Yeah.
I find that with some books that start off really excellent, I get to a point where I'll be reading it for a while and I won't have realized I'm not enjoying it. And then when I do, I get rid of it. And then there's some that I'm like, it's pretty good. I just don't really care. I drop those a lot.
And it's hard to judge. Is it just the arc you don't like? Maybe it's just the story you don't like. And maybe the next arc will be a better story you like. Or just because that'll happen. I mean, when you've got an issue coming out every month for your entire life, There's going to be some arcs that you don't necessarily respond to, but maybe the next one you'll really like. And it's hard to say. This is. I usually have to go a couple of arcs in a row where I realize, all right, this book is just not getting better before, because I can't drop it on a one bad arc unless it's terrible.
It's like, I'll tell you, I don't know why I'm still reading Buffy. I honestly don't.
So stop.
I want to know what happens.
Well, see, and that's the thing for me. Like, I don't have a problem dropping a book because what happens is I find that I don't miss it.
Yeah.
Like when I stopped reading X Factor, like I didn't miss it. I don't think, oh, I wonder what's going on. Like even now when like Ron, you've been like, oh, I read this. It was good,
it's
again.
Good again.
I
just, it is good again.
I just, but I don't care. Like I don't feel like I miss it. I don't care what's happening.
And that's why you don't have any meaningful relationships in your life.
I've been married for years.
Yeah,
that's why you don't have any meaningful relationships.
Wait a minute. Which one of us are we talking about? This is the most ridiculous Alice in Wonderland conversation we've ever had.
Anyway, moving on. So if you have any questions, you can call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Please leave your name. Please leave where you're from.
Yeah, Mr. Anonymous comic book movie question asking guy.
Keep it to 30 seconds. Thank you very much. Josh, tell them how they can help out iFanboy.
You can help out iFanboy in all sorts of ways. If you like what we do, because we like what we do and we want you to like what we do, you can help us out in some ways very direct, some ways not just easy, simple things. You can go to the website. Make sure you click on the banners. These are the people who want to support us. They listen, we admit it. They send us money. And the more that you click on the banners and buy their goods and services, the more they're going to do that, the happier we're all going to be. You will get quality things. You get how it works. If you want to buy things on Amazon.com, you don't have to do a damn thing, but go to iFanboy.com/Amazon. Click on the little Powered by Amazon button. It takes you right to the normal site. You can actually bookmark that as a way you get to Amazon. And then anything you buy from Amazon, you know, we get a little something from. And that takes – if you were going to buy it anyway, that's what I'm saying.
How cool would Amazon.com/iFanboy be, though?
That would
be our goal. That's our goal.
That would be cool.
That's our 20.
Bezos, we're coming for you.
That's our stretch goal.
We have shirts. We have shirts you may have heard about. We just got in our Battle Pug shirts by artist Mike Norton. And from what I hear, they're quite fetching. They're very nice.
We'll talk about those in a second.
Okay. Those are heading out. And we have some other shirts available, but I believe they're running low. And we're going to have more shirts coming, too. So that's another thing. Buy some merch, basically. Or you can be an iFanboy member. An iFanboy member is a member of the audience who likes the show so much and wants to support it. They don't mind throwing a couple of bucks our way every month. It's not a big thing. $4 a month or $42 a year. It's about the price of one comic book. I'm sure there's one of those mediocre comics that you don't want to be reading. And in doing so, you're taking responsibility and you're saying, I want to help support this show that I like a lot. In return, we are going to send you a prize pack with some stickers and buttons and a free random comic book that we make no guarantee of quality.
No quality guarantees whatsoever.
No, that could be really funny, though. That's really kind of what we're going for. Countdown 34. Great. Or you can come a little higher at $10 a month or $100 a year, and that is for people who really want to show their support. We don't require you to do either, but if you want to, we really do appreciate that. And in return, we try to give out as much stuff to the members as we can. Recently, members got to be the first to look at the Graphically beta for digital comics, and we've given out a bunch of prizes. Just the other day on Twitter, I just gave out a bunch of comic books for the first member.
Listen, we're working on a giveaway in February that you're going to want to be a member for. That's all we're going to say. Stay tuned. But there's going to be a great giveaway come February. So
I heard about that.
Yeah. I want to win that giveaway.
No.
I want to go to there.
What if I become a member? What if I give me $4 a month?
Technically speaking, if I handed Josh $4 and he handed me $4, we both be members.
I have to check the rules.
Steph, this movie,
same $4.
This job has definitely cost me more than $4 a month. Yeah. I could guarantee that one.
I had to buy Scotch tape the other day. It cost more than $4.
So anyway, so there's going to be a great giveaway in February. So become a member by the end of February. You'll want to be a part of that one. So.
Yeah. As Josh mentioned, the Battle Pug shirts came in finally this past week. If you are on iFanboy or Twitter, you would have found that out. They are going out in the mail. If you pre-order them, they should be all out in the mail on the way to you. One note is that we switched suppliers, which means the shirts are different stock. And we noticed that the female shirts, the ladies' shirts, run slightly smaller than the old version shirts. So if you are a lady who ordered a shirt, and it shows up. It's a different size than what you were expecting because you were based on the old shirt. Send us an email. We can work out some sort of size exchange because they are different. They run smaller more. They run more like women's shirts are supposed to run. One of the complaints we had about our old shirts was that the women's shirts ran really big.
Yeah.
Well, these
hey,
are
lady.
Back to normal size.
Lady, so, you order a shirt?
You want a shirt? So send us an email, contact@ifanboy.com, if you have any size problems with these new shirts. But they're all in the mail. They're pretty badass. I've been wearing my Battle Pug shirt most of this week.
And you hate dogs, so really.
I do hate dogs.
And also, if you go to ifanboy.com, we got a whole bunch of great stuff that Josh is going to tell you about in a second. But don't forget that we do the Don't Miss podcast every Monday. If you haven't subscribed to that, go to iTunes and subscribe to it. We've taken some time off on it around the holidays, but it's coming back at you. So you want to stay tuned to that to talk to hear about from a great creator for about a book that's coming out this coming week. And then actually, this coming week, we're going to have a Talksplode interview with Scott Alley, the bigwig editor in chief guy over at Dark Horse Comics, who also writes comics and he edits Buffy and things like that. So if you're a Buffy fan or a Dark Horse fan, you're going to want to tune in this coming Thursday on ifanboy.com to hear that interview with Scott Alley.
Awesome. Make sure you get over to ifanboy.com. That is our website. We do not just talk and put it out there. We put a lot of work into putting up a website where we have all sorts of original writing and discussion and just talk about news and things that come out and just a whole bunch of stuff and a really, really great community. So go to ifanboy.com and then go to ifanboy.com/about and you can see who we are and find out other ways to hook up with us on the net. Like I said, we gave away some stuff through Twitter. So you want to even make sure you follow us. Watch there. You never know what can happen. And then we also do a video show. Last week was kids or all ages comics. I don't think we've come up with a good term for that yet, but we already did the show. So what? Next week we are going to talk about one of the most consistent and preeminent runs of comics in this modern age, Ultimate Spider-Man.
What?
You guys were there, right?
I was there.
Yeah. Okay.
Don't have to sound surprised.
Right. You can send us an email at contact@ifanboy.com or call us on our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Any questions, comments, concerns, discussion, Thomas, complaints about Josh yelling at the listener base? You know who you are, Josh.
It's a show for entertainment purposes.
Wait a minute. This is a show?
You know, like every time
that,
like,
entertaining?
I make fun of Ron. It's not like his mom calls and he was like, you know, it was very disappointed.
She
in the way
calls me, actually.
Yeah, she doesn't have your number.
I mean to tell you for these last five years, every Saturday.
Mom!
Every time I make a joke about Ron, she calls Connor. It's this twisted cycle. It's a joke. Lighten up, people. You know what? If you write in, there's a good chance we're going to make a joke about something you wrote about. Yeah. Be prepared for that.
Messages are for entertainment purposes.
Jeez.
Also, it's not really the decade.
Anyway, so we'd love to hear from you.
This is not a documentary.
Leave a voicemail too. 188-FANBOYS. It's 326-2697. If you like what we do, go to iTunes, write a review, let people know, tell your friends at the comic book store, spread the word about iFanboy. So thank you for listening.
Pushing on through.
Thank you for the iTunes recommendations.
Forward.
People who don't like this show always are like, "Oh, those guys don't know anything." We're like, we know. We know we don't know anything. We're making jokes. It's fun. We know a little bit. Yeah. I know this one guy. He makes comics. Anyway.
Where were we?
That.
So until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I am Josh Flanagan.